Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, October 6, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Hannah Vanker will perform Monday, October 7th at 7 p.m. in St. Paul's Episcopal Church on the corner of East Avenue and Dixon Street in Fayetteville. This vocal ensemble from Estonia will perform ancient hymns and runic songs with a contemporary imagination. The concert is free, but donations will be accepted in support of ovarian cancer research. stpaulsfay.org or 442-7373 for more information.
Ahead on Weekend Ozarks, teaching children about the arts through both live performance and one really large painting. Plus, our Sunday morning montage and more.
You may have heard that late Monday night our time, the federal government went into a partial shutdown. Already, effects have been felt throughout our region, and that's the subject of Timothy Dennis's Week in Review.
The government shutdown is affecting many federally funded programs, such as the furlough of federal workers, to the closure of national parks like the Buffalo National River. One area that won't be affected by government shutdown, at least in the near term, is research and development at the University of Arkansas. Jim Rankin, Vice Provost for Research and Economic Development at the U of A, says that the university has been told that it can continue its research for projects that have already received funding.
We do get quite a significant amount of federal funding, and some of these are, you know, one-year grants, two-year grants, and so they're not always tied to the federal fiscal year, which started October 1st. So they could have at least a year of funding in their account. So we won't see an immediate impact, but you'll start seeing one or two that start running out of funding.
However, Rankin says that some of the other side effects of the federal shutdown are already being felt. For instance, the National Institute of Health isn't taking any new applications for grant funding, meaning that researchers at the university have proposals waiting for when the government operations continue. In addition, if a federal employee or facility is involved in a particular research project, that employee or facility won't be available during the shutdown. And Rankin says that the current federal shutdown has brought with it less immediate uncertainty to the research world than the federal sequester did earlier in the year.
In that case, we weren't quite sure what was going to happen, what kind of impact we had. Each agency had a certain percentage they had to cut, and we didn't know if specific grants were going to be cut, so we were a little bit unknown in that particular situation. In this one, the guidance just tells us go ahead and do the research as long as you have funds. And so we've kind of got a better feeling. I think the big question on this time is how long it's going to last.
But he says that he's hopeful the shutdown will be short so that the research world can get back to business as usual. Other programs receiving federal dollars have been given the go-ahead to keep operating for now, though plans for continued funding will need shoring up if the federal shutdown continues. For instance, Arkansas Department of Health officials Monday reached an agreement with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to fund the Women, Infants, and Children's Program, or WIC, on a week-by-week basis. Ed Barham, spokesperson for the State Health Department, says that the program's continued funding is crucial for those who the nutrition program serves.
The WIC program serves 23,595 infants, 42,105 children, and 2,039 women. And of those women, 10,700 were pregnant and 2,760 were breastfeeding as of last month when these numbers were compiled. So that's a very, very significant portion of women in the state who qualify for benefits because they have a very low income, poor, and very much need proper nutrition for themselves and for their babies.
273 State Health Department employees' jobs are funded through the WIC program. The agreement between the USDA and State Health Department covered state administrative costs through the week, which prevented furloughing of WIC staff and allowed for the state to continue issuing WIC certifications and recertifications without interruption. But State Health Department officials say the negotiations for funding the WIC program will continue as long as the federal shutdown lasts. But many federally funded departments have had to drastically scale back operations. One such department was the Army Corps of Engineers, which manages operations at Beaver Lake. Sean Harper is the Beaver Lake Project Operations Manager. With the news of the government shutdown Tuesday, employees at the Beaver Lake Project Office began closing campgrounds and day-use parks. While he said that 12 of the office's 14 full-time staff would be furloughed once multi-year contingency funding ran out around Thursday, not all operations at the lake would cease during a continued shutdown.
The power generation is still going to continue. There's there's going to be sufficient staff maintained to obviously operate the dam internally in terms of any kind of gate changes that might need to be made. Power generation, those requirements are still in effect, and so there's a minimum staff that's going to be maintained to make sure those things still occur.
Harper said that a minimum staff would also be retained to make sure that gates to the parks stay closed and that the parks are still secure. But the Army Corps of Engineer parks and facilities aren't the only outdoor amenities affected by the federal shutdown. The shutdown is also affecting national wildlife refuges across the country. Keith Weaver is the project leader for the Central Arkansas National Wildlife Refuge, National Wildlife Refuge Complex.
The immediate impacts are the fact that all the national wildlife refuges in Arkansas will be closed to public access, and any types of activities that would be conducted on those, any types of public use activities that would be conducted on those lands are canceled at the present time.
Those public use activities include hunting and fishing, wildlife observation and photography, and environmental education and interpretation. Weaver says that the only activities that will continue at the state's 10 wildlife refuges are forestry management, such as pending timber sales and cooperative farming activities. He says that a lengthy shutdown could have negative implications for the economies and areas surrounding the wildlife refuges. And finally, public service programs across Arkansas are anticipating that the government shutdown will impact their operations, including straining the financial resources of low-wage workers who depend on a stipend from the federal government. Our House, a Little Rock-based organization that provides shelter and training to the working homeless, has 11 AmeriCorps VISTA members working on important programs for a meager salary. Georgia Myarton, the organization's executive director, says that the shutdown could complicate the daily lives of these dedicated workers.
A third of the Our House team is made up of these AmeriCorps VISTA really public servants, and they're not going to be receiving their living allowance. These folks live literally day to day. I mean, their living allowance already puts them at the poverty line. It's already less than $5 an hour if you break it out that way. So their commitment is to live in poverty for a year while serving people in poverty.
Myarton is concerned that a prolonged shutdown could mean that VISTA members won't have money to pay rent or even buy gas and groceries. From the Herald and Blanche Kolk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Last month, we reported on a survey released by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville that showed the positive short-term impacts of cultural experiences on school children, such as field trips to the museum. Walton Arts Center also partnered with the University of Arkansas to study the long-term effects of exposure to the arts on kids. Laura Goodwin is Walton Arts Center's Vice President of Learning and Engagement.
We had the advantage of having years and years of data of which kids came to Walton Arts Center and which kids did not. The results are exciting. By interviewing seventh grade students, many of whom had come to the Walton Arts Center a lot during elementary school, and then many who had not come at all by virtue of which schools they attended, we interviewed them or surveyed them to find out how they were different. And what we found that kids that came a lot say that they want to be cultural consumers, so they want to go to Crystal Bridges, they want to go to Walton Arts Center, and they also participate in the arts more than other kids. So they're more involved in their school programs, and they say they want to continue to be involved in the arts.
The results also showed a difference in values among the groups of kids. Kids that come to the arts often have more empathy and tolerance than kids that don't come as often. Both studies showed the effects of arts were much stronger on minority and rural kids.
So kids that have the least access benefit the most from programs at Walton Arts Center and at Crystal Bridges. So field trips are so important, and having this kind of research is so important to Walton Arts Center because it lets us advocate in a new way. So how do we make sure that every kid in Northwest Arkansas has an arts field trip every year? This kind of research is really going to be a support for us and help us speak with more authority to the school districts in Northwest Arkansas.
Last year, over 50,000 school children went through various Walton Arts Center programs, such as the Colgate Classroom Series and Digging Up Arkansas. This year, Goodwin estimates they will reach at least 30,000 and work with 400 teachers teaching them how to integrate the arts into subjects like history and literacy. Which brings us to today's field trip, a performance of Bear State of Mind. Building on the success of Digging Up Arkansas, a program that has brought Arkansas history into the classrooms of 3rd to 5th grade students for the past several years. A partnership in imagination with Trike Theater, a Northwest Arkansas professional theater company for youth, continues with this Bear State of Mind. This production has gone through a few iterations. Originally, it was designed to go into the classroom. But thanks to a grant from the Mid-America Arts Alliance, this play is performed on a grander scale inside the center's Star Theater, providing school children a richer experience. Cassie Mishevitz is artistic director with Trike Theater.
So we were very excited to be able to bring in a gentleman named Christopher Parks, who had originally been at the McCarter Theater developing a style of theater called experiential theater. He now owns his own theater company called the Experiential Theater. But what he does is that he takes a script and a narrative form, and he figures out ways for the audience to be a part of it. So at times the audience is watching like a typical, normal, traditional audience. And then there are times when there's snakes and bunny rabbits and there's call and response. And then my big thing about this is that I wanted the experience not just to be within the audience-actor relationship, but also within the environment, because Star Theater is perfect for it.
The idea is to transform a space and use the theater and the tools theater offers to be able to offer a new and unique experience to young people, one that isn't a video game or a movie. Differing from Digging Up Arkansas, which focused on tableau to reflect on Arkansas history and brought the students up close to the actors, Bear State of Mind asked these youngsters to participate, which is imperative to their oral and visual learning style. Bear State is geared toward kindergartners, first and second graders, and written by Northwest Arkansas playwright Ashley Edwards and songwriter Shannon Wurst, it meets Common Core State learning standards. The play takes students on a camping trip through Arkansas.
There is a small little Arkansas black bear that gets lost in the woods. He's befriended by a barred owl, and through their friendship, they go on a journey to uncover the scary legend of the Goro monster. Along the way, they travel to the Arkansas Delta, down the Mississippi River, over to the coastal plains, back up through the Ouachita Mountains, and back up to Northwest Arkansas. So we take a trip around Arkansas, and in the meantime, we also find a mockingbird and woodpecker, a white-tailed deer, a pine tree, and so we learn a lot about the state symbols, bumblebee as well, and then also go through all the different regions of Arkansas.
The experience doesn't start inside the theater. It begins in the lobby, where about 135 students from Montessori, St. Vincent de Paul, and a couple of other schools wait, somewhat patiently, as the stage manager engages their imaginations.
Welcome to the Walton Arts Center. We are about to see a play called Bear State of Mind. Before you go in and see this play, I wanted to tell you a little bit about what you should expect. Normally when you come to a theater, you'll sit in chairs, but we're not sitting in chairs. We're going to sit on sleeping bags and tarps on the floor. And so one thing to remember about these sleeping bags is that they're spread out, but you should sit with your class and stay with your class on those sleeping bags, because as you'll see, there are dirt paths on the floor where the actors will be going in and around.
Once the rules are laid out, the experience begins. Actors Jason Sewell, Shannon Wurst, and Julie Gable, who play brother and sisters Tommy, Patsy, and Hattie, welcome the kids and get their imaginations flowing.
You know, before we go into our campground, there are a couple things we need to do. And the first thing we need to do is make sure that everybody has on your hiking boots. You brought your hiking boots,
did you bring
right?
your boots?
Oh, don't worry if you didn't. They're right in front of you. Go ahead and pick them up and put them on your feet. Make sure you lace them up really tight.
Tommy, Hattie, and Patsy bring the students class by class into the theater, walking under a leaf canopy and into the magical forest, where tents, a picnic table, and sleeping bags await. The trip begins with Patsy strumming a guitar and reminding the campers of their home, Arkansas.
Do you guys want to hear what we just learned?
Yes.
Huh. You guys ready? Here we go.
I love my, I love my, I love my Arkansas.
There is no shushing allowed. In fact, making noise is encouraged.
A woodpecker! It is a woodpecker! Let's make that sound.
If the actors need the students' immediate attention, they raise their hands and wave them, slowly moving them down. The kids, anxious to see what's next, abide as the black bear puppet makes his entrance, ready to take the campers on a trip through Arkansas to meet new friends and uncover wildlife, folklore, and state symbols. Bear State of Mind has been on preview to 2,000 kids for the last 2 weeks, with a final performance tomorrow. After the kinks are ironed out, the play will be ready in full force for next fall's entering students. This is Ozarks at Large.
Who cooks? Who cooks? Who cooks for you? That's a great... Go row!
It's fall, perhaps not the season most associated with ice cream, but when it comes to ice cream, is there really a bad season? Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda this morning brings us a story about some locally made ice cream.
When talking to local entrepreneurs, it's not unusual for them to credit family or friends for encouraging them to make the leap into the business world on their own. This is the story from Matt Feierabend, creator of Pure Joy Ice Cream, which is based in Siloam Springs. His story begins a few years ago when he and his wife, Megan, were looking for a way to help their friends, the Tugwells, who were adopting a little girl from China. Matt says his friends were about 2 months away from finishing the adoption, but they still had a substantial amount of money they needed to raise. Matt had been making ice cream at home for fun and decided he would put his hobby to good use.
And so we said, we could do our ice cream. Everybody keeps telling us they would buy our ice cream. And so I said, you know, I'm going to make everybody put their money where their mouth is. I'm gonna sell the ice cream and see if they actually really like it that much. So we did. I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks. We just said, okay, we're going to do it on this Saturday, and we're going to sell it all day. We're going to do samples, and we pre-sold them. So we pre-sold them at $15 a pint, and we sold 200 pints of ice cream. And we got several additional donations on top of that and raised $5,000 in one day.
Matt says he grew up with a fondness for ice cream. His mom loved Baskin-Robbins, and Matt says he always wanted to try their craziest flavors. A few years ago, he decided to try making his own ice cream at home, and he requested an ice cream maker for Christmas.
At first, my ice creams were terrible. They were absolutely awful. And so I actually put the ice cream maker away for about 6 months. Didn't make a single batch. I had like 3 bad flavors, and I said, you know, maybe I'm no good at this. Maybe that was a bad idea. And so I put it away. I made the vanilla that my mom, her recipe, which is fantastic. And so I made that a couple times, but I didn't really do much. And we went on a trip and had some artisan ice cream at a place in Kansas City. And we had a goat cheese ice cream and a fresh mint ice cream made with mint leaves. And so those two flavors were like my first experience of artisan, you know, locally crafted style ice cream. And I was like, man, this is really good. I'm going to go home and figure this out.
Matt went home and looked up recipes online for guidance. Fast forward to the summer of 2011, and he used his newfound skills in the kitchen to help his friends raise money for their child's adoption. Following the successful fundraiser, his friends encouraged him to sell his ice cream more frequently. Matt was hesitant because of how much prep work it required, but said he would consider it if they could find a commercial ice cream machine that would freeze 2 to 3 gallons every 15 minutes. Matt says he was also resistant because he and his wife already had a photography and framing business. The food industry is not an easy one to be in, and it just wasn't something he was really interested in. Despite his doubts, his friends kept prodding and encouraging him to turn his hobby into a business. So Matt kept looking for machines and eventually found an affordable one in Fayetteville. The next hurdle was finding a commercial kitchen where they could produce the ice cream.
I don't know where we're going to put this thing. It needs 3-phase electric. It needs water hookups. It needs everything that you're not going to find in just any old building. And turns out there was a revitalization going on in Siloam Springs downtown, and they were remodeling a restaurant down there. and went to the owners and I said, hey, what are the chances you'd let us put the ice cream in there? Expecting them to totally say, yeah, I don't know, we'll have to think about it, we'll have to talk about it. And they immediately just said yes. They immediately just said, yep, let's do it. And I actually had to be like, can we talk about the details? I think this is more than just a yes. And so they said, whatever you need. Whatever you need, we'll make it happen. So we came up with a great agreement with them where they let us use the kitchen and they get to use our machine. And so, yeah, it's a really cool situation where we've everything just kind of fell in place. And I was standing there then going, I have an ice cream business. I never tried to. I never went out wanting to be in the food business or ice cream business. And now here I am.
28 Springs shares its kitchen with Matt, who only allows himself to spend one day each week on Pure Joy business. Another thing that carried over from the fundraiser into his new ice cream business was the name Pure Joy. Matt's wife came up with the name to honor the little girl their friends were adopting, Esther Joy, and the fact that they use pure ingredients. Another aspect of the business is 100% of profits go to orphan care. Specifically, the money is given to the Titus Task. The organization was created by Matt's friends in memory of a young boy they were trying to adopt from Haiti who died.
And unfortunately, the orphanage that they were, or that he was living in, was not feeding him. And so they were pocketing the money that they were getting and not feeding the kids. And so he passed away unnecessarily. There was no reason, no need. So they became really passionate about helping not only care for orphans, but also helping families who are trying to adopt, raise funds, just navigate the whole adoption process. And so they've just been a huge support through their organization, the Titus Task. They support families through grants, and they also support an orphanage in Haiti that does good, that actually takes care of the kids and does a lot of good stuff. So they moved down there just 2 or 3 months ago to be down there full time.
Pure Joy ice cream owner Matt Feierabend says he questioned if they could give 100% of their profits away and grow to be a sustainable business. He did some research and found that Newman's Own does it, so Matt decided to give it a try. During the year and a half the business has been open, Matt has never taken pay, and everything above operating costs is given to orphan care. While the profits may go to help orphans in other countries, Pure Joy's products are locally sourced, which helps farmers in the region.
Things like vanilla beans and coffee beans don't come from local sources. We can't grow them in Arkansas. But everything that we can get local, we get local. And those things that we do get from foreign producers, like coffee beans and vanilla beans, we work with companies that are trying to get them direct trade, fair trade, organically, things like that. So all of our coffee currently comes from Onyx Coffee Roasters in, they're in Northwest Arkansas. I was going to say in Springdale, they've got that location there. And we try to work with them to use their direct trade beans as much as possible. I have some ice cream that I brought. Actually, I have a new bean that they have that they did a direct trade where they bought the whole farm. Yeah, they bought the entire farm, and so it's the only place you can get it in the world. This exact bean is from Onyx Coffee Roasters in Northwest Arkansas.
That farm is located in Brazil, and you're likely to taste it when sampling Pure Joy's Cup of Joe. Some of the company's other flavors include Redhead Sorbet, Garden Mint Chip, Sweet Brown Vanilla, Rosemary and Peach, Midnight Mocha, and Happy Goat. This flagship flavor uses goat cheese from White River Creamery in Elkins and Canyon Ridge Farms near Tahlequah, while the honey comes from a farm in Lincoln. Using two sources of goat cheese is an example of how Matt is working to make the flavors less seasonal. He explains goat cheese is only available when the animals are breeding, so by dealing with farms that may breed at different times of the year, Pure Joy Ice Cream has the ability to produce its happy goat flavor for a longer period of time. Owner Matt Feierabend says one of the ways his ice cream gets its unique flavor is from preparing small batches of ice cream that are slow turned. The result is a thicker, heavier, creamier ice cream that people may not be accustomed to. Currently, Pure Joy ice cream is available at special events and by the scoop at Poor John's, a coffee shop in Siloam Springs. Matt is working with other coffee shops and restaurants in the area to stock his ice cream. His plan is to give them a limited supply and then send out a message via social media to inform the public of where they can find Pure Joy ice cream.
And hopefully people will race to the coffee shop safely and at proper speeds on the road. And the ice cream will sell out really quickly. Because our goal is not to have a lot of waste, especially since we do 100% of our profits. We don't want to have, you know, half of the pints that we deliver end up getting thrown away. So we want to keep it manageable. We want to keep it small and sell as much of it as possible and not have any waste.
Owner Matt Feierabend is working on raising money for a food truck, which he says would make it easier for his business to be more mobile. For more information on where else you can find his ice cream, you can visit facebook.com/purejoyicecream.
When Dvorak composed his Eighth Symphony starting in 1889, he was increasingly considering himself a tone poet. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of the KUAF Sunday Symphony, Sunday nights 7 and 9, right here on KUAF Public Radio. Join me this Sunday for Dvorak's Symphony No. 8, Opus 88, from the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra, led by Niklas Harnoncourt. That's coming up 7 and 9, Sunday night, right here on your source for classical music, KUAF.
The Jones Center for Families in Springdale looks a little different this week, a bit brighter on the outside. Mazur, an artist and muralist from Ireland, has spent more than a week transforming a large outdoor wall into a vibrant message of perseverance. He spent the week enlarging the image from an original piece of paper to a wall that is more than 100 feet long and about 30 feet high. Gallons of paint, tall ladders, a boom lift, and several young helpers were used in the creative process. And in between the work, Mazur popped over to a taqueria for lunch.
Unbelievable. So I had it yesterday, and I've had it today, and I'll probably try and squeeze another few in before I go.
That was Mazur last week, a few feet from his new favorite place for tacos in downtown Springdale. He was taking a break from working on the mural that helped generate attention for the first Spring Creek Arts Festival for Young Artists that will be held next month in the Jones Center. The mural is visible to motorists and pedestrians traveling by the Jones Center on either Emma Avenue or Huntsville Road.
Been working there since last Monday. On a big mural there with the kids in Jones Center, sort of getting to know them, them getting to know me, showing what I do and getting to participate and help in any way they could. So it's been a great experience the last few days, yeah.
The vivid mural has both literal and metaphorical messages. The word support can be read in large purple letters emblazoned across a yellow background and images of different colors. Mazur says some of those figures, like a green hand and arm pushing against the ground, are designed to suggest getting back up after falling down. Mazur, who has also created a large impressionist image of General William O. Darby in downtown Fort Smith, says he places positive messages in all of his work. Many young people helped Mazur in this most recent mural project, and he says their fingerprints are all over the mural in Springdale.
So they were pretty much just doing the tough work. I was sketching up and be like, that's going blue, and then, the blue beside the yellow, I was teaching them about contrasting colours and how they work and complement each other, and just asking me 100 questions as well of who I am and why I'm here, and try to tell them where Ireland is. And so it's cool, you know, it's great to just tell them my little world that they're not aware of, and then me coming into their world, I've never been here before, and leaving my mark with them, and hopefully they get something positive from it and can talk about that maybe, or not being cheesy, but to have a little bit of positive impact on their life is quite rewarding for me.
Mazur says the mural on the wall at the Jones Center began as a sketch on a piece of paper. After everybody involved signed off on the design, the only thing he had to do was recreate that small image on a much, much larger canvas. He's been creating murals around the world for more than 15 years, so he says the recreation of one of his ideas onto a giant canvas isn't alien to him. But still, when he saw the actual edifice for this project, there was a momentary pause.
When I got there, it was like, whoa, here we go. And it's big, and I'm cool with that, but it's the heat as well. The heat gets me, you know, we don't have this weather home, so it's just a little bit tiring. Because it's labor-intensive work. You're painting a huge wall. But I've no complaints. I can't complain. It's been great.
Mazur's work has also been reproduced on a limited number of shirts and posters to help raise money for the Spring Creek Arts Festival. With his bright, large work now on public display in downtown Fort Smith and at the Jones Center in Springdale, the Irish artist is leaving his mark in the region.
I hope so. Like, I'm back here because it's a very inviting town, city. Like, it's everyone's so welcoming, and sort of like it's become a little bit of like a home away from home, and it's great. You know, I'm not built for real big cities. Like, I love New York. I was there doing a piece just last week, but it's overwhelming here. It's like a good pace, southern hospitality. Is that what you call it? You know, everyone's so welcoming. Like, why wouldn't you love that? You know, and I'm even thinking about maybe staying here for a year next year. So I'll look into that as well. So
because of the tacos.
The tacos, yeah. And all those homebrew beers, they're great too, you know.
The Jones Center mural was formerly dedicated, and Mazur is on to his next projects. He'll help the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art in Madison, Wisconsin, dedicate a new space, then go to Chicago before heading home to Ireland. His latest mural at the Jones Center for Families in Springdale is now on display and will last for...
ever. I don't know. Hopefully, I don't see it being removed or anytime soon. And hopefully I'm going to be in the States a lot of next year. So I'll keep in contact with the guys, hopefully work with them again, follow up. Because, you know, they're on a journey where they're trying to take kids from one situation, put them in a better, and they can see that full journey. I usually just dip in and dip out. So I want to keep a relationship with them and see how the guys are getting on. And with that, then I can keep an eye on the mural and, you know, maybe a pigment in might fade because of this heat. So, you know, I'll address that, or they might get vandalized. I don't know, but I'm there to make sure it's okay, you know.
Mazur, whom the Irish Times has identified as one of the 100 creative catalysts in Ireland, can be found online at mazurart.com or at his Facebook page, Mazur Art. And he spells his name M-A-S-E-R. He talked to me last week during a break from creating a new mural at the Jones Center for Families. And if you'd like more information about the Spring Creek Arts Festival for students, you can go to their website, springcreekfestival.com.
If there is one thing I love about working here at KUAF and for Ozarks at Large, is that I'm constantly learning new things,
yes.
Whether it's doing a story or, you know, just reading the news.
Right.
But working with you, you just have all these tidbits of information.
Yeah, I can't get home without a map, but I have all these tidbits of information.
Right. Well, you told me that the first Monday in October.
Always
the Supreme Court of the United States.
That's when the season begins. That's when the session begins. And even with the partial shutdown of the federal government, they will hear arguments tomorrow. So in honor of the beginning of the Supreme Court season, here's a montage about lawyers, attorneys, courts, and juries.
Tell it to the judge on Sunday. Tell it to him, leave me alone. Tell it to the judge on Sunday.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Mrs. Florek, I have one more question. Did you meet with the divorce attorney on February 23rd?
Yes. I had a brief consultation with a divorce attorney a few days after the allegations against my husband surfaced in order to weigh my options.
Are you saying you've ruled out the possibility of divorce?
I have no plans to divorce.
But you haven't ruled it out.
I haven't ruled out running for president. Probably won't happen, but I haven't ruled it out.
I took a little risk. Send lawyers, guns, and money.
Maybe a bunch of kids having a good time, innocent merriment, something like that?
No, no, no. It sounded like a scream to me.
Hit them with the Fourth Amendment laws.
That's not really appropriate. Fourth Amendment.
You're a law student, right?
Yeah.
Well, don't come on so heavy, you know. Why would I ever hire you if you're coming on so heavy?
State your name for the record.
Omar Devon Little.
Mr. Little, how old are you?
About 29, thereabout.
And where do you live?
No place in particular, ma'am.
You're homeless?
And the wind, so to speak.
I'm impressed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with his influential friends.
Then what do you want? I just want to talk.
Well, what's there to talk about? 11 men in here think he's guilty. No one had to think about it twice except you.
I want to ask you something. Do you believe his story?
I don't know whether I believe it or not. Maybe I don't. So how come you vote not guilty?
Well, there were 11 votes for guilty. It's not easy to raise my hand and send a boy off to die without talking about it first.
I think my heart must just be slow.
To see how you did on our courts and legal montage, go to our website, OzarksAtLarge.com.
We have, on occasion, on Ozarks at Large, a chance to profile native Arkansasers who've reached and surpassed the century mark. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to a Madison County school to meet Tobe Bohannon.
Watson Primary School in Huntsville's jammed with children this bright Wednesday morning. They're excited because they'll let out early today. Long lines of children guided by teachers passed the school's maintenance man, Mr. Tobe Bohannon. When they spot him, many wave and smile. Some even stop for a hug. Mr. Tobe, they call him, is 100 years old.
Hi.
Hey, Mr. Tobe.
Hi, hon.
Tell me your name.
Noble B. Bohannon, born 1913, April 29th.
He laughs as he says it. Does seem impossible, surviving the influenza epidemic of 1918 when he was just 5 years old, the Great Depression, two world wars, the industrial age, the space age, the digital revolution, 9/11, and whatever era we're in right now. Anyway, Mr. Bohannon shows up here every morning by 6:30 a.m.
And I unload the buses. Then after they're gone and all the kids are in, I go around and lock all outside doors so nobody can get in, you know.
With chronic and violent school shootings, Huntsville School District, with 2,300 students, like all districts in America, is on guard. And they look to Mr. Bohannon for frontline security surveillance. He constantly roams the halls, checking doors and watching for any strange activity. His pace is not impaired. His eyesight and hearing are just fine. And his grip, incredibly strong. Principal Matt Cook says he's a valuable asset to the school.
Who is an example to all the kids. Kids look up to. He comes in every day, does his job. And obviously he's here for one reason, that's for the kids and the kids' safety, and make sure that they are all being taken care of every time he's around.
Mr. Bohannon's people settled Bohannon Mountain in Madison County back in the 1800s, but he was born at Rockhouse Community in Southern Carroll County to William Riley and Lillian Precia Harveston.
There was five of us kids. The youngest one was 3 years old, oldest one was 12, and I was next to the oldest one. Well, anyway, my mother, we had a milkman. They eloped and ran away, left us kids with my dad. So my dad raised us, five boys.
Young Noble dropped out of school at the age of 13 to help support the family, he said, in a rather unorthodox way.
Me and one of my cousins, he was older than me, and we had a horse and a buggy. And we took the upholstery loose around the buggy seat and wrapped the pints and half a pint of whiskey and put them down in there and drive to Eureka Springs. Sold whiskey out of the buggy.
Brewed from sparkling spring water, he said. Prohibition had shuttered all Eureka's saloons, so the young entrepreneurs found a robust market for their corn whiskey. While in Eureka, the young noble found a legitimate job doing rock work with the local highway crew. He and his family also picked up seasonal migrant work, picking peaches, apples, and strawberries.
Well, we all worked at Springdale in the fruit harvest and whatever come along. But we got by pretty good.
His father eventually took a job with the railroad. Noble Tobe Bohannon married, bore a daughter, and left Arkansas for Southern California in 1936 at the age of 23 to build naval shipyards along the West Coast, then hired on as an electrical worker for the Navy. He and his wife separated. He stayed in L.A. doing construction, specializing in concrete work. By the 1950s, he helped build the now iconic modernist Tishman Plaza building on Wilshire Boulevard. Google it. It's very cool. His daughter by his first wife passed away at the age of 65. Toby met his current spouse, Barbara, in Los Angeles. She was working for American Airlines. She was catching the bus downtown when they encountered each other. They spoke and soon were married, he said. She was 29. He was 59. They have one son. And when Mr. Bohannon first moved back to the Ozarks from the West Coast, he did try to retire.
I was going to quit. I retired from the Finishers Union and got my unemployment and everything. I moved back here and I was going to quit. I built a new house in marble on 40 acres. And it didn't go very big because I wanted to work.
Under the federal Green Thumb program, Mr. Bohannon got a job working for the Huntsville School District in the 1980s. He's been there ever since. Barbara also works here, too, at the elementary school as a substitute teacher. She's often reminded being out in public with Tobe so much that she's married to a novel figure.
It's true, you know, and he's seen a lot, and he's been a good provider, and, yeah, and not many people, 100, have a 37-year-old son.
That 37-year-old son, Todd Bohannon, is a musician and manager for Ben Jack's Music Store in Bentonville. Noble Tobe Bohannon is a sight now. He takes no medicine, has never been hospitalized, he said, except for a bad appendix. He's trim and muscular. He sports a white mustache and a Huntsville school ball cap. He doesn't smoke or drink, but he laughs a lot, and he loves compliments.
I like for people to say, boy, you're in good shape for your age. I'll tell you this and that. There's nobody, I don't guess anybody around my age that does what I do and enjoys doing it for the people.
Get this, Noble Tobe Bohannon still does concrete finishing work. Mr. Bohannon takes us up a sloping sidewalk he poured years ago up the hill from the cafeteria. He engineered it as a conduit. Rainfall kept flooding the cafeteria below. It's been dry for years, he said.
And see how I fixed for the water to run down and around? We ain't had a drop in there since.
We head back inside, and along the way, another flock of children pass by, eager to say hello.
Get out here, look.
Get out.
Come on out here.
Last April, the Bohannon family, including a crop of great-great-grandkids, along with 100 friends, celebrated Tobe's 100th birthday with music, cake, and song. He's among 53,000 other centenarians, and the odds of becoming one are good. One out of every 26 baby boomers can expect to live to age 100. But sadly, those who do reach the century mark are often circumscribed by disability or illness. But remarkable elders like Mr. Noble Tobe Bohannon exemplify that living into our hundreds is not only possible, it can be a real pleasure. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
It is Sunday, October 6th, 2013. Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Good morning.
You know how much I hate morning, right? I really hate morning.
But I'm here because I get to talk about theater.
Which you really love.
And there's some fine theater going on this weekend in Northwest Arkansas. 4,000 Miles, not ready to wrap up yet, at Theater Squared. One more weekend.
Yeah, today, tonight, and then a whole nother weekend.
A whole nother weekend. It's an Amy Herzog play, was a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize.
Won the Obie in 2012 for Best New American Play.
About a 21-year-old college dropout who bicycles across the country only to land at the Greenwich Village apartment of his 91-year-old communist grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a comedy.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's one of those things that they call a comedy drama,
but I think
which more and more things are.
But there's plenty of comedy.
This is at 7:30 on Fridays and Saturdays, 2 and 7 today, and again through next weekend. Mm-hmm. And tickets start at $22 at 443-5600. If you've seen In the Company of Men, you know what to expect from playwright Neil LaBute.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw The Shape of Things, and I think it took me 2 days to get my mouth to close. And The Shape of Things is kind of the distaff side of In the Company of Men.
Mm-hmm.
You will be absolutely shocked at the end of the play, which is on stage this weekend at Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville. It's a love story about a part-time college student who meets the girl of his dreams and is swept off his feet, and soon everything is just changing in his life. He loses weight, he gets a better haircut, he changes his wardrobe, and it's all wonderful, except that his friends Jenny and Philip begin to worry that Evelyn, the girl, has pushed things too far. And then you find out what really happened.
Yeah, this is there was a movie version of this as well. Yes.
It's on at 2 o'clock today and again at 7 o'clock, October 10, 11, and 12, and 2 o'clock next Sunday at White Auditorium in Burns Hall at Northwest Arkansas Community College. Tickets are $8. And getting your jaw shut is your own problem. And finally, a play I don't know, but I'm fascinated by. It's called The Clean House.
Mm-hmm.
Another Pulitzer nominee.
Right.
This is at the university.
Yes.
This is at the university in Fayetteville. The premise is that Lane, who is a doctor, has a Brazilian housekeeper who doesn't like to clean, but likes to think about jokes.
Yeah, wants to be a comedian, actually.
Lane also has a sister who wants to clean and a husband who's a surgeon who's in love with one of his patients. And somewhere in there, there's surrealism.
Yeah, it's sort of a magical realism sort of take.
I mean, if you're used to, like, Edward Albee, you can dive right into this and know exactly what's going on. Two great lines from the play. Love isn't clean like that. It's dirty, like a good joke. And I think maybe heaven is a sea of untranslatable jokes, only everyone is laughing. 2 o'clock today, 8 o'clock Wednesday through Saturday, and 2 o'clock next Sunday at University Theater. And tickets are $16 for adults. Don't forget the American Girl Fashion Show this afternoon. Two shows, 12:30 and 4, at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. Walker Landing Arts from 1 to 3 at Crystal Bridges, Make Art Outside. And it's a fall festival at Hobbs State Park near Rogers, with blacksmithing, weaving, spinning, a Civil War physician, old-time games, and music, and that's from 1 to 4.
And that's free, right?
It is.
Okay.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And if you've been to the Fayetteville Farmers Market on a Saturday this season, you've probably seen and heard Block Street Hot Club performing on the square. Recently, the four members of the band, Clay Johnson, Andrew Chu, Felipe Antonio, and Ryan Ashworth, stopped by our Furman Garner Performance Studio, and during that visit, they performed their rendition of Duce Ambiance by Django Reinhardt.
That was the group Block Street Hot Club inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. You can find out more about the quartet by searching Block Street Hot Club on Facebook.
The Eureka Springs Original Ozark Folk Festival presents a live recording of Michael Jonathan's Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour Saturday, October 26th in the City Auditorium. Guests include Michael Martin Murphy and Leroy Troy and the Tennessee Mafia Jug Band. The recording will be aired on public radio and television as well as the Armed Forces Radio Network. Tickets available at theaud.org.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Bentonville, Fort Smith, Fayetteville, and Berryville.
Berryville. Carroll County.
Yep.
All right. Ozark's a larger production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
I'll be back tomorrow at noon on KUAF with a brand new edition of Ozark's at Large. You and I back together Thursday at noon.
Yes. Until then, thanks for listening and have a good Sunday.